Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds Like Comics, the podcast devoted to all things comic books in movies and TV. I'm Luke.
And I'm Jay. Welcome to the podcast.
Today's topic, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. It is a sequel to the 2007 film Ghost Rider and features Nicolas Cage reprising his role as Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider. This is your warning. We will be talking spoilers.
Yeah, it's funny, when this came out at the time, it felt like it came out like quite a large gap between movies, but it was only 4 years, which is, you know, fairly normal. I guess it's fairly normal for things like the MCU when they've got so many franchises to get through before they get back around to a character. But I guess at the time that was quite a distance between films, because it got long enough I started to wonder if they were going to recast and start from scratch. Did you have that thought at the time?
Yeah, I mean, they did. Everybody else, didn't they? I think at one point, Eva Mendes, they wanted her to come back. And actors were just turning down the chance to come back. Nicolas Cage, obviously, the only one coming back. But it very much, it's a different thing, isn't it? You know, the first one was set in the US. This one is in Europe. It's got a very different feel to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching this at the cinema. Did you go to the movies?
I did, yeah. I remember feeling it was okay at the time. I struggled to remember. I wasn't surprised this didn't get followed up. Because even now on this rewatch, it felt like it had a smaller budget than the previous one. I mean, not only is it set in different locations and is missing the significantly sized sort of big moments they had from the previous one, but you're missing as many named actors. Like, not that they've got nobodies, but the previous one, like I said, you had Eva Mendes, you had Peter Fonda, you had the actor from Blade who was in
Gotham,
who plays...
I'm blanking.
It's Bullock.
Like, I'm blanking on his name.
Yeah.
Great actor. He was in Sons of Anarchy as well. Really good actor. Yes, so many characters didn't come back. I mean, with Peter Fonda, apparently he did express interest until he read the script, and then he was no longer interested. Talking about the budget, I'm not sure what the first movie had, but this one had 57 million.
Yeah, box office down from the previous one.
It went on to make just short of 150 million. So, you know, nearly three times its budget. Yeah. But at the same time, like when this, you know, came out in, what was it, 2011, they wanted it to do a little bit better than that. And it's really unfortunate. I'm a massive Nicolas Cage fan. He's always entertaining. Like, no matter what he's starring in, he never phones it in. Like, it could be big budget, an indie movie. He always gives it his all. This was the last big screen film for him for quite a while. He's started coming back now with, you know, films like Renfield, you know, the recent horror movie, plays Dracula, he's fantastic in that, and he's starting to get more bigger films now.
Yeah.
But 2011, this movie, this was at the end of him having regular movies on the big screen.
Yeah. And it's a shame. I think he got, around this time, I think they're doing the SNL sketch of like him being in like every movie done by Andy Samberg, even appeared as himself being just like Andy Samberg on SNL, showing that he found it in good humor. But yeah, this is around this era that he was like Mr. like, he's pumping out like five or six of these like direct to streaming movies a year. What's going on? He must be over, he must be done. But it's never been about his work ethic. He's always been one to commit to the role. And he is trying something in this one. It's funny, watching it this time around, I've recently rewatched Field of Dreams for the first time in quite a while. And when I watched it this time, there was a certain Kevin Costner-esque woodenness to this performance. I'm not sure. I'd never noticed that before, but for this one specifically, or it might just be in when I was watching, for some reason the sound wouldn't sync up. I rented it off Apple TV, and yeah, the dialogue happened like it was just a little early.
Oh,
right. So was it early or late? It was delayed, but because it's out of sync, it was out of sync a good second or two. I couldn't get it to work. I tried stopping and restarting it multiple times. I tried to fiddle around with
all
it.
The usual tricks. Yeah. Oh, that's disappointing. I went old school. I watched the DVD.
Yeah.
If we can call that old school now. That's how I got to watch it. I think I get what you're saying. Like, there is a woodenness to his performance, but I think he's definitely looking at showing off that contrast between Johnny Blaze and Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And I mean, he is a big fan. Like, I remember when we reviewed the first movie, we were talking about how to make this movie, they had to cover up his Ghost Rider tattoo. That's how big of a fan Nick Cage is of the character. They're doing something different here. But he never phones it in. He was all in. Nobody asked him to, but he turned up to set and he had a skull painted on his face. He like blacked out his face, and he's like, because he wanted to be in character, he wanted to feel the character. And he's like, Nick, we're going to do that in CG. No, I want to feel it. So he like, again, he was all in. But this one, it's a lot sillier than that first one. Like when the kid, Danny, is like, you know, he asks him, what is it like? What is it like when you pee? And it has that cut scene of Ghost Rider pissing fire whilst laughing. Yeah. You're like, and I remember they put that in the trailers as well. And I was a bit unsure going into the movie because it's from the makers or the directors of Crank. I'm a big Statham fan. Those Crank films just don't do it for me. But I definitely would say the first movie was a lot better received than this one. I mean, this received worse critical reception than the first film, with criticism being aimed towards the script, CGI, and performances.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. Also, the MCU was in full swing by this point. Like, we're gearing up for an Avengers movie. We had big contrast between what other comic book movies were doing, unlike the first one that was felt more on par with what was going around at the time. So that plays into it a bit as well, I think.
It definitely does.
They are trying to stand out. They are trying a different technique because it is supposed to be a horror character rather than like a full-on superhero. It is a sequel. They're trying to do character development. Clearly, he's been suffering with being the Ghost Rider for a while. From the previous film, I think actually they mention it almost in real time of like this first happened however many years ago, which is about equal to the difference between the movies coming out.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they had considered, which I'm sure also plays into the way Nick Cage is playing it, of like, this is someone who's not actually been living. He's been existing since this is all kicked off. But it is, but that tone shift, I guess there was a disconnect. We're seeing
it's too different.
Yeah, but
there's things that I do appreciate in it, which are just like there's some interesting choices. Like when you've got Cage and he's transitioning between Blaze and Ghost Rider, and he's on the bike and he's going super fast, and he's kind of like going and the skull's coming out, but then going back in again. And it's almost like he's trying to get out, but he's at odds with himself. So there's some interesting things, but they did plan to do a third film. Cage was initially on board until he was no longer, I guess he said he was done. He didn't want to continue. Not too long after that, the film rights to the character reverted to Marvel Studios, and the Robbie Ray's version of Ghost Rider appeared in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is MCU. And I remember, have you seen the episode with Ghost Rider?
Yeah, I have.
Because you don't actually see Johnny Blaze, but you see his boots, and he goes over and he passes on Ghost Rider to Robbie Reyes, and he's got the car, which was in the comics at the time, which is pretty cool. But that's it. We've had nothing Ghost Rider since, not in live action, not in animation.
There's been talk of them doing a Midnight Suns-esque team-up using Blade, who has been talked about for quite some time now. He was even teased at the end of The Eternals, for those who may have actually seen it and you didn't know who it was. You see Jon Snow, who's Kit Harington, like he's about to touch the sword, and you hear like, "I wouldn't do that if I were you." That is actually Mashaal Ali as Blade saying that to him.
What a weird introduction of a Academy Award winning actor. Because he did win for Moonlight, didn't he? An Academy Award winning actor.
Second time for Moonlight.
Right. But his introduction as Blade in the MCU was a voice cameo during a post-credit scene at the end of Eternals.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah, because they were supposed to be building something up to be with, like, you do your Blade movie. I guess their post-credit scene was going to be him with Kit Harington as the Black Knight, who he's supposed to be playing. It's getting way off the rails, but they were in a group with also Doctor Strange and Ghost Rider, and they took on the more supernatural, large-scale threats, like a supernatural Avengers almost, which I think were called the Midnight Suns. And that was supposed to be like a line, like a fairly straight line, but we're still waiting on a Blade film. They're still talking about putting together a script that everyone's happy with. No talk yet of an Eternals 2 or anything with the Black Knight.
I don't think we're getting Eternals
further with too. Ghost Rider, nothing with anyone else. Like, Doctor Strange has thankfully popped up and has won multiple times, but nothing else putting in, which it would work because you do have these darker characters, and it's a tone they're not hitting yet on their movies. It's one that we had Werewolf by Night, which was fantastic, but it's not something they've really quite hit. Doctor Strange 2 in the Multiverse of Madness kind of had it. There's that very strong Sam Raimi feel.
Did like that.
But they haven't gone full horror yet in the MCU. I really feel like they could and they should look into it.
They absolutely could. And especially, we're getting Fantastic Four, which is going to be, primary colors. It's going to be a little bit lighter, you would imagine, just to have that contrast, so they're not just doing the same type of thing. Focus on characters like this. I was just looking, actually. So I said this was released in 2011, which is correct, but that was December in the US. So when I watched it in the UK, and it would have been the same for you in Australia, it would have been 2012. Yeah, I think it's like a February, March release, because this was one of those movies. So cast your mind back to 2012. This had that post-conversion 3D treatment. I watched it in 2D.
That's right.
But they were still doing that then. I remember when Clash of the Titans came out, and I watched that in 3D at the cinema. Awful. That was an awful experience. Yeah. That was not Avatar.
Because they weren't shot in 3D. They were just post-conversion. So it made dark movies darker if you didn't see it in 3D. And people complained. I remember I saw this in 2D. I didn't see the 3D conversion version. But I remember people who had said they didn't utilize it at all. There was only like one or two things they can even recall were in 3D.
Maybe the chain.
Yeah, they had to watch this glasses and stuff.
Or pissing fire. I guess that would have been.
Yeah.
I was trying to think moments like
the crane, that. The crane tilt, maybe.
Do you know what? I think this is not my rating, or maybe it is. I think this is a good bad film.
Mm.
There's moments that are quite enjoyable, some interesting ideas. Maybe when he was on that bike, you know, I was saying he's like, he's changing, but not. That could have been a 3D moment. But
yeah,
you mentioned the crane. I like the idea that any vehicle, and not just like mechanics, like the horse, like in that first movie with Sam Elliott, it can take over and use his power over that vehicle. So we've seen the flaming motorcycle. I didn't expect to see a flaming crane. That was kind of fun. That was
And
that was a fun idea.
Near the end, you get him in the flaming like truck as well.
Yes.
Like I do like that. I've always thought that was a smart thing, because if every Ghost Rider has a flaming bike or a flaming horse, or Robbie Ray has a flaming car, why would that be just the one thing that they've got that power connection with? It wouldn't. It'd be really that something they carry, right?
So that is an interesting idea. And just the size of the crane as well. All right, we'll start with the plot, right? It's pretty basic, to be fair. A French priest seeks the Ghost Rider's help to save a young boy from the devil. In exchange, he offers to return Johnny's soul, but in order to succeed, Johnny must first confront his own demons. That's the film. I didn't realise until doing prep for this that the boy, Danny, his name is Danny Ketch, who was the second Ghost Rider in the comics.
Yeah, I remember that, and it was something that didn't sit quite right, because it's been kind of retconned in the comics now. They introduced Danny Ketch in the 90s because they wanted a more edgy, updated Ghost Rider, and they didn't think doing that to Johnny Blaze would work for some reason. I don't know why. So they brought up Danny Ketch. One of his differences is he's got the blue flames instead of the orange, because blue flames are hotter than orange. That was the
is that the idea?
Yeah, that was the because it was the 90s and you needed to make him something more extreme somehow. But it was later by a later writer, when they brought back Johnny Blaze and all this other stuff, that they're actually related. They're actually brothers and like so long departed. Like,
right.
You know, his mother had left them and gone off and had another child, or his dad had cheated on his mom with some woman, and that is where Danny came from. So there's like a family connection. And knowing that and then doing this version, I'm like, doesn't quite fit.
It doesn't.
Because he's far too young to be a brother.
Yeah, no, so that's... Unless you're going to say
the family connection's like the devil.
I think it's just they've used the name.
Yeah,
so exactly. The fans will like it. When Johnny's given up the Ghost Rider and the devil is doing his thing, and Danny gives him back the flame, another cool moment. This is a movie that is just full of cool looking moments. But we don't actually see Johnny transform into Ghost Rider like we did in that first film. Remember that one change in particular, the main one in that first movie, like Cage is going like full Nick Cage when he's screaming and everything else and the skin's melting away. See, he's either Johnny or his Ghost Rider in this. You don't get that change. Whether that was a budget thing, I don't know.
Yeah, strange. It's notable by its absence. Like, I think everyone would notice, like, why do they never see him just happen? Why do they always just like do a cut to a new angle and there it is?
Or
like a cutaway and then cut back. Maybe it's just a style choice for the directors, or maybe when they did tests, they weren't happy with how it looked. Who knows? But this is what we've got.
I'm honestly thinking it's a budget thing. You know, with the directors, am I right in thinking that Mark Navaldine and Brian Taylor, they also directed the Jonah Hex movie for DC? Was that them? Or did they write it? Remember. I've got a feeling.
I think they wrote it. I think they wrote
it. Yeah, I'm sure their names were on it. And again, they'd done the Crank movies. Yeah. This film, though, was the last. I'm pretty sure it's the last project.
Yeah,
they haven't
been in a project together since this film.
No. So what does that tell you? Oh man, the character Blackout. How bad does he look? We've got Johnny Whitworth as Ray Carrigan / Blackout, a character from the comics, but it's pretty much, I think the look of the character, the abilities are different in the comics, aren't they? So I think they just wanted the look.
He doesn't have the rot thing.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the rot thing. That's something done for this.
It's not a good look. It's very TV.
It's not. It is. It's very like.
But not TV now.
It's Smallville. No, it's like Smallville, like Freak of the Week kind of makeup.
Great call. It is very Smallville.
Yeah, which it's bad, but also, like, unfortunately, they did an interesting thing of, like, where he's attacking people, and then it is kind of blacked out. Even when he's having a fight with Ghost Rider, they're kind of using that as, like, a supernatural way of he's getting towards them and, like, almost this. I'm like, that looks interesting. But that should be his ability. His ability should be to, like, create darkness and he can hit you because it's so black you can't see. It's a surprise attack. That's far more interesting than maybe some enhanced strength and durability over the rot. It doesn't, like, I have a feeling the reason for that is they knew they had to get PG-13. And so what their initial idea for his abilities wasn't going to work because you can't show blood and you couldn't have anything too gory. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had PG-13 anymore. So they had to find a way for him to kill people in visually interesting ways without breaking them PG-13. So they thought having people CGI kind of moss over would be more interesting than just like something like, oh, it goes black and then they're just on the ground as a body. Like,
yeah,
which I get, they're not wrong.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it's incongruent with the with character's abilities. Which is another reason why, like, with Ghost Rider, like, oh, because we hit heat, they just turn into flamey. Like, it's not, it doesn't break the thing for PG-13.
It burns them, they just disintegrate. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, PG-13. They originally intended this to be R-rated. That's what it was going to be, but Sony got cold feet about the idea, and instead they wanted it to be a more market-friendly movie, and PG-13 was the way to go. But it's interesting to note that this movie was the second film to be released under the Marvel Knights banner after Punisher Warzone in 2008, and I'm pretty sure it was just these two movies. Unless maybe the last Blade movie was that Marvel Knights? Or I think it was just these two, Punisher and this one.
Yeah, because that was through New Line, if I remember correctly.
I'm thinking Ghost Rider and Punisher, they were Sony. But there's a weird thing where this movie, yes, it's Sony, but it was also Warner Brothers. I don't know if that was just in Australia and the UK or if it was the US
and
as
the
well.
Philippines.
And the Philippines.
Because of marketing. There's some distribution problem with these areas.
So it's always
Warner
weird.
Had it.
Weird when you see that, because like right now, like Warner Brothers movies released theatrically in Australia are distributed or shown by Universal. So you'll go and watch like the latest Warner Brothers movie and it opens with Universal, which is weird, especially when you're watching like the latest DC movie, like really, really throws you off. All right, so we've got different casting here. So Peter Fonda didn't come back as the devil. Instead, we've got Kieran Hines, great Irish actor. Yeah. You know, he's played characters like this before. Like after this, many years later, he was Steppenwolf. I was blanking on the name. He was Steppenwolf in Snyder's Justice League. And yeah, it's huge, huge body of work. he's fine in this. You know, he's doing what he needs to do. But what's interesting, though, and it makes sense why he doesn't like Peter Fonda, because they make out that there's been previous versions where he's had different faces. And yeah, they show you some of those faces. And one of them is Jerry Springer, which I thought was pretty funny. But just having a gag like that, tonally, it is so different to that first movie. And again, it's not everything works about this movie, but they're just going to try it anyway. But that was interesting, though. They showed a couple of other people. Who else were that? Vlad the Impaler. So all these people throughout history, they've all been the devil, but just wearing a different face.
Yeah. And you've got Idris Elba as Moreau.
Oh, what a waste of Idris Elba's talent. He's French in this.
Yep. That's something he is. He's also an alcoholic who loves wine.
There we go. Well, hey, you know, he's French. I guess that's a stereotype. His original character, not based on an existing comic character. He comes in and out of it. He's wearing contact lenses similar to the ones he wears as Heimdall in the Thor movies. But he doesn't do too much in this. And he's a bloody good actor, but they're not really asking a lot of him here.
They needed a character to exposition dump, and they chose Idris Elba to be that mouthpiece, unfortunately, and to loosely connect certain scenes together. Like, hey, I'm part of this order of monks. Like, come with me. I'll take you somewhere safe. We can cure you of your ghost rideriness. You're like, all right, whatever. Nice to see him. Doesn't need to be there, unfortunately. Not that, because there's just nothing for him to work with. His character's not important enough to do anything. He's got no powers. He can't fight devils. he tries. He does try. But it is an unfortunate waste of such a talented actor.
It really is. But I mean, the movie opens with Anthony Head. Giles from Buffy. He's playing a senior monk at the castle where Nadja and Danny are hiding. Dead. I remember when I watched that first time. Oh, look, it's Giles from Buffy. Oh, look, it's the Prime Minister from Little Britain. Surely we're going to see him again. Nope, just dead.
Yep.
Very strange. Was that a favour? Was he going to visit one of his mates on set? Oh, while you're here, do you want to shoot a quick scene? It's just weird. He's in it and then he's gone. And we've got Christopher Lambert as a monk covered in tattoos.
Yeah.
Oh God. And
he had to shave his head for this.
He went through a lot. He went through a lot.
They had him spend 3 weeks or something of sword training for that sequence, which I guess must have been originally more like longer.
Had to have been.
They abandoned it at some point to just what we see. And also that the putting all those tattoos on him was so lengthy. Eventually, he just like, don't bother taking off. I'll carefully sleep to try and save time so we can get a day or two or three of shooting with this rather than having to spend the amount of time to take it back off and then go back to his hotel and then come back early to put it back on again. He's like, you know what? Skip the taking it off part. We'll just knock it out. Which, he's good on him for going through all of that, but
yeah, definitely. But it, again, like Elba as Moreau, he didn't really go anywhere. Didn't do too much. And, you know, Christopher Lambert, this was his first major role, or his first major Hollywood role in, oh God, what would it have been, about 11, 12 years since Highlander Endgame?
Mortal Kombat? Oh, that was the 90s.
No, he did Mortal Kombat in 95, 94, 95? But anyway, he did Highlander Endgame in 2000 with Adrian Paul. And then from that to this. So that was over 10 years.
Yeah, wow. I didn't realize it was such a big gap. Yeah. Then you got Johnny Whitworth's Carrigan or Blackout. He was more interesting before he got turned.
He was, but we've also done him. We talked about Blackout. But yes, he was more interesting before, as you said, like a Smallville freak of the week.
Yeah. It's a shame because all you really ended up with is the Danny Blaze stuff. Danny Ketch.
Just merging the two,
I'll just drop the Dick Ketch. It's just Danny with Johnny and a somewhat like almost fatherly role. I guess they're maybe shooting for like a less emotionally heavy Terminator 2 style thing with them, but there's not enough story to go there. They're not on screen together for long enough to establish that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to hit a lot of beats out. So it's just not what it kind of just happens, unfortunately. Like, there's a lot of interesting ideas.
We get a couple of scenes where there's a little bit of bonding going on. But yeah, nothing like Terminator 2.
Yeah, it doesn't have the runtime or the set pieces to, like, really get there. It's like they didn't want to take the time to stop and, like, oh, we'll have a scene where you can be, because they don't have that many days. They've given themselves kind of an artificial time frame. Yeah, it's odd. It's almost like missed opportunities. If you thought a little bit more about this, you could have found some more like depths and
it definitely
a little bit more to add in.
It could have been more than it ended up being. Like, I know fans, you know, of Marvel comics, superhero movies that just haven't gotten around to seeing this movie. They've seen the first one, but there's just something. I mean, we both went to the movies, like we were always going to watch it. Well, there's a percentage of people that never got around to it. Oh, you were talking about in the comics in the 90s, you know, Ghost Rider, Danny Ketch, he was blue. That's what happens in this movie where he can now heal, you know, because they're talking about the devil and light. So he's got a new...
That's another odd thing.
At the end of this movie.
That was something, comic book writer, Irish, Garth Ennis... He's the one who came up with the idea that the Ghost Rider, the Spirit of Vengeance, was a corrupted angel. That was something he came up with. And he had like a two or three story arc line for his run to really flesh all of that out. Initially it was Danny Ketch who was actually the angel. Like the Ghost Rider was... like a demon thing, but then the Danny Ketch one was like a corrupted angel, and then there was like some kind of connection thing that Garth Ennis tried to flesh out, and it was like a to give something for him to do. Like him riding around just fighting like bikies and gangsters and stuff doesn't make sense. You need to make some use of his power set. He's a supernatural being. You shouldn't be having him in superhero comics fighting like supervillains. It doesn't make any sense.
It's something a bit different.
There's a lot of world building to do to get that across. They keep falling back to like the devil.
But I always forget how this ends, though. I think, a third movie could have been interesting. So looking at doing something a little bit different. Now, the composer on this movie, I don't recognize his name, but we must have talked about him before. David Sardi, he contributed work to the Green Hornet movie, the Seth Rogen one. We've reviewed that, so we must have talked about him before. But it's interesting, right? He scored the Stage 6 film logo for Sony Pictures. That's pretty cool. He scored the films 21 and Zombieland and the drama End of Watch, written and directed by David Ayer. But this is the really interesting part, right? He produced Oasis's seventh studio album, Dig Out Your Soul in 2008. This was Sade's second time working with the band, having produced their 2005 album Don't Believe the Truth, and he worked with Noel Gallagher again in 2011 with Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. So wow. There you go. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. And yeah, recently he scored The Beekeeper, which I know you have both seen.
Ah, right. Okay, so there's your David Ayer connection. See, he also did Bright.
Yeah.
That was David Ayer, wasn't it? The Will Smith
that was David
movie.
Ayer.
And Sabotage with Arnie. Was that David Ayer as well?
I think it might have been.
See, he's done quite a few things with David Ayer, but I missed that. Right. David Sade, The Beekeeper, Statham. What a film.
Yeah.
It's the name of the secret organization, but he's also a real beekeeper. Oh man, we've got no time to unpack that. I really enjoyed that movie. But Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, if you're gonna rate it out of five.
I'm coming in at probably a 2 out of 5. I did find myself at multiple points in the movie, like checking my watch and being distracted. And noticing the strange feeling of cheapness. I think I've said it before. It feels because of the set pieces, they don't look like they're on big sets. They seem to be filmed kind of outside where they don't have to build too much themselves. And the very basic plot, it just, there's not a lot to gnaw onto. And even your side characters are just kind of there. Even the ending isn't super satisfying. Of like, there's no big punch up. There's no big thing he has to overcome. He got rid of the spirit. He comes back to him. He easily gets everyone out of his way and chases him down. Then it's almost just kind of hidden over the beats. So overall, I just found it a bit disappointing. Despite the fact no one put in a bad performance, it's just, the whole thing just kind of felt there and unnecessary. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, there's interesting ideas, like we said. It just doesn't all come together. Yeah. It really doesn't. And whether it suffered from having a smaller budget than that first movie, creatively, they approached this one differently. Always good seeing Cage back in this role, but I did prefer what he was doing in that first movie. There's things to like, but ultimately, yeah, I'm with you. 2 out of 5. It doesn't all work. There's moments that work really well, but on the whole, it's not a good film, really.
It's not something you can ultimately recommend, I don't think.
You wouldn't, whereas I could find myself recommending that first one, but I wouldn't recommend this one. Unless you're a diehard comic fan and you haven't seen it.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's it for our episode all about Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance.
If you'd like to contact us about this episode or suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, you can find us on Facebook as Sounds Like Comics Podcast.
You've been listening to Luke and Jay, the guys from Sounds Like Comics. See you soon.